Hey, I'm Mike Joseph, and thank you for listening to Detoxicity, a show by men, about men, but for everyone. I hope you enjoy the content of this podcast, and I want to let you know about a few things you can do to support us and our mission to challenge traditional notions of masculinity and create a more communicative, positive, and loving environment for all. You can subscribe to Detoxicity on any podcast platform that you use to listen. We are available just about everywhere. Also, don't hesitate to rate and comment, as these help us move up in the podcast rankings. I'm on social media, or at least I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok as Detox Pod Guy. Feel free to drop me a follow. Now I have a Patreon page. Yay! And Patreon gives you the opportunity to get cool merch and exclusive episodes of this podcast in exchange for subscribing. Go to patreon.com/detoxicitypod to find out more. Finally, I'd love to hear from you. Whether you found an episode of the podcast particularly enjoyable or enlightening, or you know someone who'd be a great guest, or you'd like to offer constructive criticism, or if you yourself would like to be on the podcast, hit me up. Reach out to me at one of the aforementioned social media channels, or if you're old school like I am, drop me an email, detoxpod@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and take care.
Hey, everybody. My guest for this episode is Matt Kovacis. Matt is based in Chicago. He hosts a podcast called The Men in the Arena, which is about masculinity. Sounds familiar. We always need more of those. Anyway, Matt and I connected over the holiday break, and we talked about a lot of things, including the reason he started his podcast, which has a lot to do with his own personal journey through unlearning the things that he had been socialized to believe, and also discovering his own sexuality, something that we've talked about numerous times over the course of the last 4 years. But everyone's story is super unique and different and relatable and interesting, and I think Matt's story is super important. We also talk about his desire to help people and to be a model and a leader, and how that's going to lead him down a path of mentoring and coaching and, being a front-facing person for, quote-unquote, the cause, as it were. Anyway, Matt's story is great. He is doing fantastic work. So let me get out of the way, and I will let you check him out. Here is Matt Kovacis, everybody.
So my name is Matt Kovacis. Who am I? You know, that's such a broad question. I grew up in the suburbs, nice neighborhood, upper middle class family, and, you know, did the whole thing, go to school, get good grades, play sports in high school, went to the University of Illinois, graduated with a degree in economics, a minor in business, and then got my quote unquote dream job, which is something that I'd seen my mom be very successful in, corporate banking. So I've been in that arena, if you will, in a couple different roles since I graduated in 2017. With that, separate from my career, I've been on quite the journey of self-discovery, of self-healing, of self-acceptance. But that didn't really take shape until maybe shortly before I turned 27. So I had been kind of sleepwalking through life, if you will, living a life basically of what others told me I was supposed to do in terms of get the good job, make the money, live for the weekends, binge drink on the weekends, and do it all over again. So I've had to unlearn quite a bit, but that's a little bit about me. Now I'm very passionate about mental health. I have a podcast called Men in the Arena that is very centered around mental health that me and my co-host started at the beginning of 2023. I'm doing a lot more life coaching, a lot more volunteering, getting involved in the community. And so my life has transformed quite a bit over the last, call it 12 to 18 months. For the better.
That's awesome. It's interesting for me to hear about this coming from somebody who is a lot younger than I am, because I probably incorrectly sometimes feel like the generation after me and the generation after that are much better equipped with tools to go through the process of finding themselves and not have it take as long as it did for me and people like me. And one thing I've certainly learned over the course of doing this podcast in the last 4 years is that that is not always the case. So I guess my first question is, was there a specific light bulb moment for you? Was there a point when you were like, oh shit, I'm not fulfilling I'm not doing what I want to do. I'm not being myself. Was there like one pivotal moment, or was it a gradual realization of things?
It actually a combination of both. It was a slowly realization of not feeling happy and really feeling like life was just happening to me. I think for a long time, I just thought that's how life was. I thought that's how you went through life. I slowly started to realize that I was unhappy. I kind of had an idea why, like my sexuality was something that I struggled, my relationship with it was something that I really struggled with growing up. So every night I hit the pillow, I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about what other people are going to think, being judged, viewed differently. So the place of shame, embarrassment, and guilt. And so that was always weighing very, very heavily on me throughout this whole journey. I think the light bulb moment that I figured out recently was a period around 2021 where I was in a long-term relationship with my girlfriend at the time of 4 years. We were living together. And I knew for a little while at that point that it wasn't going to work out. Like, she wanted to sign another lease. That made me more anxious than it did excited. And so I knew what I needed to do. I knew I needed to break it off, not only for me, but for her, and kind of go our separate ways. It took me a little bit of while to gather up the courage to do that. So that happened. And then I remember just feeling very free. So this was like the summer of 2021. And to the point where I was like, wow, I haven't been single in 4 years. This is it. Now I'll be happy. And I got a lot of external validation that summer, especially from friends. They called me the summer MVP because, you know, I was going out all the time, hanging out, getting women, this and that. And so I was getting a lot of praise, and I ate it all up. And I think the light bulb moment for me was when that started to dwindle into the winter in Chicago. People stopped going out as much. You know, no one's getting as much external validation. And then I realized, oh shit, all these feelings that I still had are still here. Like, that temporary validation was temporary in nature. And once all that wore off, I was like, I'm back to where I started. And I think at that point, I was like, something, I have to change here. Nothing's going to change if I don't change anything. And that, I think, was the moment for me where I was like, yeah, there's something wrong here, or I'm just going to continue through life confused, unhappy, numb from an emotional standpoint. And I just didn't want to feel like that anymore.
There is an element of bravery in not coming to that conclusion specifically, because I think a lot of people come to the realization that they're not happy in this situation where it looks to others externally like you're living the dream. I think a lot of people internally feel a lot of conflict with that, but don't do anything about it.
That's a great point, Mike. I actually haven't brought, sorry to interject there, but on the outside looking in, I remember I got so much praise, not only around that, but like, you've got such a good job. I remember hearing it all the time. And in the inside, I didn't feel fulfilled by my job at all. I'm like, this isn't for me. So then you kind of feel guilt around, well, everyone's telling me I got this great job, but I don't like it. Am I ungrateful? Should I be liking this job? And then I remember when I first started sharing my story and coming out, people couldn't believe that I was struggling. Everyone thought that I was doing so great. And I think just a good life lesson to approach things from a place of curiosity and not judgment. And it's really taught me that, because I experienced it firsthand. And then you see it in so many other people.
That's absolutely true. And I still think that there's a step from recognizing something needs to change and then actually making the change. And I don't want to say most, I don't even want to say many. I feel like a lot of people get stuck in that, how and where do I make the change? Or maybe like, if I make the change, what if shit goes super sideways and things get worse? How am I going to handle that? What advice would you give for people who are in a similar situation? And we'll get into the specifics of that situation in a minute.
Yeah, I think the first step is talking to someone. Talk to someone you trust. That's always a piece of advice I give. I have a great support system. I knew my family would be supportive of me. For me, it was my sexuality. I just had so much shame there that I couldn't even muster up telling anybody. And so eventually I told my sisters, and then I got therapy. And that for me was what I needed, because I knew legally that they couldn't say anything. So I think if you're holding in a big secret, right, it could be around anything, not just your sexuality, but talk to someone you trust. And just understand that it's going to be painful. Like, life is hard. If you're suffering in silence, you're suffering in your head. Every time you hit the pillow, you're thinking about this thing that you don't like about yourself, or this conversation that you had that you wish you would have said something else. That's hard and very painful. Life is also hard, like accepting who you are and loving yourself. And I think I got to a place where I realized that no matter what I said to myself or what I did, my sexuality was not going to change. Who I was attracted to was not going to change, because I tried everything. And so I just knew that at some point, you have to stop resisting the inevitable, the truth. And I just got to a place where there was nowhere else to run. And so I remember telling my sisters, I mean, it was one of the most painful texts I ever sent, because it was the first time that I really said it out loud. Like, for the longest time, it was just in my head, all these thoughts. So my biggest piece of advice is just to talk to someone, because it can be really powerful. Find someone you trust. If you don't have anyone you trust, find a therapist. If you can't afford a therapist, write it down, like journal. There's something very powerful about taking something that's all the way up here in your head and putting it either on paper or speaking it. That can be very powerful in terms of getting you to that next step.
It makes it real in a way to see
very real.
It on paper, or to have someone else know it. It's not just in your head anymore. I'm thinking about the beginning of my personal coming out process. And, you know, this is going back 30 years, so a much different time frame. And the first time I let anyone know that I was queer, and I was using the word bisexual at the time, was in a letter. I think probably the first four or five people I told, it was via the written word. And obviously, by the time this is published, it'll be 2024, and people don't write letters anymore. So, you know, you, I guess, started your coming out process via text. Also, it's a couple of weeks after I did the podcast with Rob Cohen, who's the host of Two Bi Guys. And so the issue of male bisexuality has been really prominent in my mind in the recent past. So I guess walk me through what the process was for you. When did you first even make this realization?
I get that question a lot, and it's really hard for me to pinpoint an exact moment. If I did realize it earlier on in my life, I think I quickly suppressed it, because I grew up in a very heterosexual environment with supportive parents who always I knew would support me, but with like friends and friends' parents that were outwardly homophobic. And so, especially when you're young and impressionable, I think I realized at a really young age, I was told that being anything other than straight was wrong and something you should be ashamed of and embarrassed about. Like, you don't do that.
Right.
And so I really suppressed it when I was very young. And I think I started to kind of realize who I really was, probably as I just matured a little bit. So maybe at the beginning of college, the thoughts really started to come up and weren't going away. And I remember just telling myself, there's no way this is true. I would deny it to myself. I remember I looked into, like, there's that type of therapy you can
conversion therapy.
Yes, that can supposedly make you straight. I looked into that. I didn't do it, but I looked into it. I really did try to do anything. And so that's where it started. And then I got into a relationship for the wrong reasons, because I hadn't been in a long-term relationship before with someone. I love the idea of spending Valentine's Day with someone and this and that. It looks so great. And I didn't really know who I was, and I didn't really know, therefore, what I wanted in someone. And so the relationship was off on the wrong foot. But my point being, I think as I was in that relationship, I started to realize these thoughts. And there was parts of me at times that were going to say, whatever, life's fine, you're content. And I was going to accept that I'm going to marry this girl and I will live the rest of my life in the closet and live an average life. But there was always this piece of me that I just knew I had a lot more to give to the world. And my sexuality was a big part of that. So ending that relationship took a lot of courage. I learned a lot about myself through that process. I don't regret any of it. And then the summer of 2021 happened, and I'm doing all this stuff and going out. And again, these thoughts are still coming up at this point. I'm very shameful of extreme shame. And then eventually, like I said, I got to that place like early 2022, maybe like May-ish, where I was like, nothing's changing. And I've tried everything. At that point, I think what it was, I had tried any and everything and nothing, quote unquote, worked. And I just realized that this was my reality. And if I wanted to be happy, this was something that I had to do. And that's what I did. And I will say, I don't know if anyone else can relate to this. Maybe you can. But I do remember when I signed up for therapy, I thought, once I do this, I'm going to be happy forever. Like, once I'm able to come out, I'm going to be happy forever. I really did believe that. And don't get me wrong, it was a painful, like, it took about 9-ish months for me to actually get to that place of coming out. I came out on the second episode of our podcast. I still remember that next day was the most euphoric day of my life, just because of the overwhelming amount of support that I got. But I thought that I would then just be happy. And it was a very good life lesson of, yes, I think I have a much more sense of internal peace and fulfillment and all that stuff. But happiness to me, I learned, is a fleeting feeling. It comes and it goes. But I can say that I love who I am. Now, I could not say that before.
There's so much to unpack there. One is the idea of therapy fixing you.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I've been in therapy a long time. I don't think that's the way that works. I think therapy, when it's done correctly, it puts you in a position where you can analyze your past and understand how it affects your present and your future and move forward with all of this stuff in mind. It kind of sets you on a path, but it doesn't mean that there's not going to be any more traumatic or difficult or painful or whatever. It doesn't isolate you from the reality of life in the world. It helps you deal with it better, again, if it's done correctly, but it doesn't isolate you from that stuff.
Yeah. I developed a lot of emotional maturity through therapy. And part of it was just the emotional release of saying these things, like saying I'm bisexual out loud. That came with so much emotion, and I felt such a weight off my shoulders. Like, there was a lot of pain there, but it was so much bottled up emotion that I had to release that therapy gave me the space to do. And then through therapy, I learned a lot about myself. I'm such a huge proponent of therapy because I came out, I started obviously for this reason, but I learned so much about myself through the process, about other relationships that I had with friends, with family. And now it's giving me the emotional maturity to understand when an emotion comes up, like I can observe that emotion. I don't have to react based on that emotion. I can choose to observe it and then respond. And I don't think I quote unquote need therapy anymore, if you will, but I still choose to go weekly because one, I have a great relationship with my therapist, and two, it's an opportunity for learn about myself. Some weeks it's all great stuff. I feel great. I'm doing good. I'm grateful. I love life. Other weeks something will come up and like we'll dive right into my past again. So I just think therapy is such a great tool. It's like someone else on a different episode of our podcast said, it's like guided mindfulness, which I just love. I think that's such a great way of putting it. And another one said, it's like exercise for your brain.
Yeah.
So there certainly was a stigma for me around therapy when my sister first suggested it to me, like, oh gosh, therapy. Like, I took the first session of therapy at my sister's place because I was so worried that my roommate would overhear me. And I didn't want him to hear. So there was a lot of shame just around what I was working towards, about just being in therapy. There was a lot I had to relearn that I'd been just so conditioned from my past and growing up.
And it's amazing that you were able to unlearn and start the process of relearning. What was the impetus behind the podcast? What made you decide to want to become a podcast host?
Yeah, I love that question, Mike. And congrats, you said 4 years you've had the podcast. That is awesome. Having a podcast is a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
I don't think people appreciate just how much work it can be. So I just want to congratulate you.
Thanks, man.
It's a great achievement. Back to the question. So I started the podcast in February of 2023. And I think I started it because at that point in my life, you know, for 26 and a half years of my life, I really struggled. Forget the years when I was a child. But for most of my life, I was a victim of my life. The cards that were dealt for me, I looked at as unfair. Why did I have to be this way? I want to change this part about me so badly. And I struggled. I suffered for the most part in silence. I never talked to anyone. I thought that was weak. I was taught that showing any sort of emotion is weak and you shouldn't do it and don't talk about your feelings and that whole thing. But then after going through therapy and continuing therapy, and I had, I like to call it a quote unquote breakthrough, just because I got to a place, I started coming out to some friends and family, and got so much love and support, which just gave me such a sense of power and empowered me in a way that I'd never felt before.
Awesome.
And so I got to a place where I had much more clarity about my life. I felt like I was the creator of my life. I felt like I had a vision and a purpose and all this meaning. And of course, I'm not perfect. I'm a human being. But I actually had, for the first time in my life, a really clear head. My mental health was in a really, really good spot. And so I wanted to help people. And I remember I would see friends and I'd be like, go to therapy. It was so great, so transformative. And they'd be like, no, I don't want to go to therapy. And I couldn't understand why. And so I had to put myself, like, 2 years ago, if someone would have told me to go to therapy, I would have had the same reaction because I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to make any sort of change in my life. I didn't even know I had a problem. And so what it showed me is that The only person that's going to change someone is themselves. But what I could do is act as a catalyst for that change. And so by sharing my experiences, by being open, by being vulnerable, by showing that it's okay to talk about these types of things, that it's okay to show emotions, that's what, how the podcast kind of started. And it's been such a fun ride. Like, I've gotten to meet people like yourself. It's done things for me that I never thought were possible. And I think that, to me, is such an important lesson more broadly, is when you start to build self-awareness and you start to cultivate self-love and actually start living a life authentic to who you are, doors are going to open that you didn't even know existed. And
that is true.
I can't stress that enough for people that are struggling to, especially when it comes to self-acceptance and self-love, when you're able to start giving yourself that self-compassion, that grace, and actually tap into who you truly are at your core. I mean, the universe does a wonderful thing where it brings everything that you've always wanted in. I really believe in the law of attraction. I didn't believe in it. I thought it was woo-woo for the longest time. But when you actually start living a life authentic to yourself, you attract what you are. The most amazing people have come into my life over the last year. I don't think it's a coincidence.
I think that's very real. And I think some of that has to do with when you have to pretend to be somebody else, it's like a weight.
Mm-hmm.
You're dragging. I always think back to the stupid Bruno Mars video where he's shackled and he's dragging the ball behind him. When you are not being honest with your loved ones or with the people around you, there is a weight on you. It's exhausting. You have to remember who you told what to, and what did you tell this person, and what does this person think about me? And you end up in this huge feedback loop of A, trying to get your story straight, and B, if you're anything like me, wondering if this person already knows about you and you're just playing a game. And I've come out as a few different things over the course of my life, but once you are upfront with yourself and upfront with other people, that weight gets lifted off and you can be, you know, authentic is such a buzzword these days, but you can be your full authentic self because you're not thinking about, hey, what does this person know about me that
you're
I haven't
told being.
Them? Yeah, you're just being you.
And right. I love that. And I saw something that was, I really liked that. Do you know Brene Brown? She does a lot on vulnerability. She said something that the research showed basically that opposite.
Reading a Brene Brown book as we speak.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, I love her. I remember I had her book, Daring Greatly, and it was all about authenticity. This was before I had begun my journey of self-acceptance. I couldn't even read it because my head was telling me, Matt, you got to come out because it's telling you to be vulnerable and authentic. And so I put the book down. That's how much I was like, I can't read it. I mean, I love her now, but she said the opposite of belonging is fitting in. And I think that's so powerful because I think people try to fit into to feel a sense of belonging, but you're not really belonging if you are conforming who you are to different groups of people to be liked and validated. And when you actually belong, you can't be anyone other than yourself. And so I love that because it feels like a paradox. It feels like it shouldn't make sense. But I always say one of the best compliments that someone's ever given me is they just called me the most unique person that they've ever met. And they said that because you don't fit into any boxes. Like you do this, but you're not this type of person. You're just uniquely yourself. And I think that's one of the best compliments you can ever get. And I think that's what you should seek to be. Like just be yourself. Everything will fall into place. The people that are supposed to be in your life will come into your life. The people that aren't supposed to be in your life will slowly dissipate out of your life. And that's okay. I think when we stop resisting and just kind of say, be water. I don't know if you know this, these things.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, just be water. Just let what's supposed to happen, happen.
And I think there's a lot of value in that, you know, and I'm kind of repeating myself. It feels better to be yourself than to be someone's version of what you think you should be.
I have a question for you. How do you get that across to people? Because I remember I would hear that 3-4 years ago, but when you're struggling mentally, it sounds right. Theoretically, it feels right. But how do you get there? How do you actually take that step?
I mean, you can't grab everybody by the hand and take them with you, first of all. I would love for that to be the case, but that's not the case. And what I try to do is to model that behavior. I trace it back to my own story, my own upbringing, my own journey. And again, I had situations, you know, a good chunk of my life where I was either pretending to be somebody else or hiding who I was. And those are similar, but not exactly the same thing. But there was a part of me that I was presenting to people that was inauthentic or not being fully truthful. And the freedom I feel now is so vastly superior to the way I felt 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago. It's like when you go to a restaurant, you eat a really good meal and you can't stop talking about the meal to everybody. You're like, you got to eat this. You got to eat this. You got to eat this. You got to be your fullest self, because the way you walk through life is so much more confident, so much more honest, so much more full. You know, and look, whatever your coming out process is, whatever you're coming out as, you may or may not lose friends. You may or may not lose family. You may or may not lose opportunity. I've lost all three, but I think what I've gained has superseded by far what I've lost.
Did you get a ton of support? I have to give so much credit to like my journey. I can't imagine where I would have been otherwise, but I got just the most tremendous support, which I think I knew I would get from family. But even from friends, there were so many friends that I thought would view me differently. And maybe they do, but that's fine. But some of the things they said, like, I respect you more. I'm proud of you. I mean, when you hear that about something that you've been so ashamed of for your whole life, it just gave me such a sense of confidence and a sense of you're on the right path and continue, like, just go.
Yeah, I don't know if there was necessarily a rallying around me in a support sense. And I came out, there was never an announcement or anything, actually, as that sounds to say now. I told a couple of people at a time, and I was situationally out for a number of years before social media came around. And all of a sudden it was like, okay, they ask you to pick a preference, and I guess this is the time, so I'm just going to do it. And then there was no more confusion or secrecy or anything like that. But I had in my head that the people that I cared about were going to be a lot more resistant. I don't know if resistance is the right word. I thought that I was going to lose people. And I did, but I didn't lose all the people. I didn't lose most people even. Most folks were just like, okay, you're still Mike. Who cares? Or congratulations or whatever it is. And some of the people that I lost came back and some of them were gone forever. And you just have to kind of take it as it comes. I do think that by being open, whether it's me being open about my sexuality, me being open about my relationship preference, me being open about my mental health challenges, I think all of that stuff has brought way more into my life than it has let out.
100%. And that's why I started the podcast. That's really why. That's also why I'm going into coaching, because I want to help people unlock what I know everyone has within them, which is when we come out of the womb, we're all joyful, curious, resourceful, and whole. And then through cultural programming and however you grew up, we start to build up these walls and have these beliefs based on how we were raised. And some people, the phrase, oh, it hurts me to hear, that's just how I am. Like, no, not necessarily. Nope. People are so resistant to the idea that they can change sometimes. And that's why I started the podcast. That's why I pick up the microphone. Like, is it easy being vulnerable all the time? Not especially, but I know I can do it. And if it's going to help someone along the way, I feel an obligation and a duty to do so.
Right. Yeah. I am resistant to people who are resistant to change. I are resistant even to the idea that people don't change, because we're all evolving. You know, we take in information every day. We meet people every day. We learn new things every day. And regardless of how tiny or incremental something somebody says or an interaction we might have, these little tiny things will change us in ways that may not even reveal themselves until a significant amount of time later. You know, anybody that takes pride in being the same person that they were 5 or 10 years ago, I feel like you're doing it wrong. The goal of life is to evolve into your best self.
100. Yeah, I resonate. There's people that come to mind and it's like, well, these are just my beliefs. And sure, they could be your beliefs now, but it's also our duty to question ourselves, yeah, question challenge. Where these beliefs came from. Why do I believe this? Is this still valid? Do I still believe this? Oh, I got this other perspective. Okay. I find myself like, I'll see something, I'll see someone, and there'll be a sense of judgment. I'm like, oh, where'd that come from? Why did that come up? Oh, is that because of like how I was raised that I'm judging this type of person? And so I think we should all be questioning our thoughts that come up, our beliefs, our thought patterns. I think there's so much power in that. And when you're able to do that and get to that place where you kind of set your ego aside, there's so much growth and knowledge to be had. And that is so exciting to me. I used to be so resistant to being wrong. I had to be right. And I was so judgmental and critical of people. And now there's no pride there. Am I passionate about certain things? Yeah. But if someone tells me something that makes sense, sure, I'll take that. There's no pride in being quote unquote right. I want to have the best formed thoughts and beliefs that are, you know, equitable to all sorts of people. I've gotten so into a lot of different volunteering stuff over the last year, and it's really shown me just how conditioned I was based on the environment I grew up in. I was fortunate to grow up in a very privileged environment. And it's been very eye-opening to see just the beliefs that I had around different types and groups of people. And while it's not my fault that I grew up that way, it is my responsibility to reform and to rethink how I view and relearn all different walks of life.
I mean, pushing yourself out of your comfort zone is not easy. And I understand from an objective standpoint why people are resistant to putting themselves in situations where they are not comfortable. But I think putting yourself in uncomfortable situations or being forced into uncomfortable situations, as I think some of us are, is what really expands your horizons. What makes you a better person, ultimately. Getting out of your comfort zone, not being stuck in the same kind of feedback loop of situations that you're familiar with, the people that look like you or whatever it is.
Mike, you're preaching. I mean, that's one of my favorite topics, is just the idea of becoming comfortable with getting uncomfortable, embracing discomfort, because anything I've genuinely been proud of or I've achieved in my life, there's been some sort of discomfort that I've had to push through. And that's what's really led to growth for me. Like starting an improv class, walking into a room with something I have no idea, with 15 people, I have no clue what improv is. So much discomfort, so nerve-wracking. Have I embarrassed myself? Of course. But on the other side of that, I've learned about myself. I found out that I really love doing this thing. It brings a state of flow to me. And I've built a community out of it. There's so many examples of that. But in order to do that, you have to take that. I took a dance class the other day with someone. Oh, wow. I mean, not a good dancer at all. But it was fun. And that's what life's about. Life's not about being comfortable all the time. Of course, there are times when, yes, don't overdo it. I wouldn't encourage you to, if you've never acted before, done improv before, your first time doing it, to go on stage in front of 1,000 people. I think that might scare you off for good. But there are healthy levels of discomfort that I think we should all be experiencing pretty frequently. And now what the optimal time is, like, I'm not sure. But I try to do it enough where I still feel, because that's how you get challenged and that's how you grow. And for me, I want to continue to grow and become the best version of myself so I can show up that way for other people. Because I don't know about you, but relationships for me now are my most important thing in my life. Like,
same.
My health is number one, but outside of my health, meaningful connections bring me more joy and fulfillment than anything ever has, because I couldn't connect with anyone for so long because I wasn't connected to myself. When I was finally able to connect with myself, I can now connect with other people. And there is nothing more fulfilling to me than like being heard, being seen, feeling seen, and also making someone feel the same way. And yeah, I kind of went on a tangent there, but I love your point on discomfort. I just think it's so important for us to continue to challenge ourselves and become better people, which I think everyone wants. Not saying it's easy, but I think we all deep down want to be proud of ourselves.
I would agree with that. So you've talked about coaching, and I'm wondering what that's going to look like for you. I don't know if you know, I am actually in the process of doing the same thing, starting a coaching business early next year. It'll probably be live by the time this goes on air. But I'm wondering why that route is something that you decided to pursue.
Yeah, well, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's
Likewise.
Super exciting. You're doing big things, man. That's awesome to hear.
I'm trying.
I think for me, as I became more in tune with who I was and really connected to myself through therapy, through journaling, through meditation, I tried to become very aware of what brought me fulfillment, what brought me energy, what gives me energy. And I think one of the things that really gives me energy is connecting with people, is helping people. And I think the heart of coaching is those two things, is really connecting with another individual. And it's really, at the end of the day, you're helping them, you're guiding them. And I love coaching because you aren't providing the solutions, because the individual knows themselves better than I do.
Right.
And you're helping them get to the heart of the answer themselves, unlocking that power themselves, so they don't have to come to someone every time they need advice. They realize that they have the resources and the creativity to figure these things out. And it's so fulfilling to me. The idea of getting to work with someone and listen to them, give them a space to share whatever it is that they want to work on, or the goal that they have, or the person that they want to become, and to just deeply listen to them and ask probing questions, it just brings me a lot of fulfillment that I had been seeking for a long time. I didn't even know what it meant to feel fulfilled, to be fulfilled. But when I got introduced to coaching, I really found out what that felt like, and I just want to run after it. And I think it's something I'm good at. I think I have an ability to connect with other people. And I think the best coaching relationships are the ones where there's a sense of trust, deep trust. And I think generally I'm able to cultivate that, because I don't generally talk about myself much in a coaching. It's more about the coachee, but I will show them vulnerability when it makes sense, and I'll relate something to myself when it makes sense, when there's a point I'm trying to make for them or it's applicable in their lives, that I think goes a long way. I'm not like, we're on an equal playing field here. I'm here to guide you, to help you become the person that you want to become. And so it's been challenging, you know, it's so different than what I've been accustomed to doing. But I think if you take a step back and you look at the things that I've done, I've lived a life more authentic to who I really am. It's podcasting, it's improv and coaching. So the common theme there, I think, is conversations, deep conversations. I don't get any sort of energy from saying, hey, how is the weather? I'd rather sit at home and read a book. But if you have a conversation like this, I could do all day. That's what I love. And I think the podcast allows me to do that. Coaching obviously allows me to do that. And then improv is just a way to creatively express myself that I just absolutely love. It challenges me. It keeps me going, working that part of the brain. And it's so much fun.
I've never done improv. I know plenty of people who do, and it looks like fun. Probably not on my calendar, but, you know, to each their own. So in the process of this journey, when like you're hanging with your boys or whatever, and I'm assuming these did not happen at the same time,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, hey, well, fellas, I'm going to therapy. Hey, fellas, I'm bisexual. Not even to say that that's how it happened. How did those in your friend group, like, how did those things kind of, what's the word I'm looking for here? How did those play out for you? I don't know if your friend was or is still very kind of dude bro centric.
It certainly was. Who are,
okay. How did that go over?
That's a great question. And I haven't really been asked that question before. I was very intentional with my journey and who I told and when, because I hadn't told anyone for so long because I was so shameful of it. And so the first guy I told was a big deal. He actually lives in Florida. He's a good friend of mine. I told him, then I told one other person, then I told a couple other guys I knew. And so I just did it when it felt right. And then I think I told a couple more people. And then once I think enough people knew, I told my broader friends from college, my broader group. And it was more around me coming out. It wasn't really necessarily me going to therapy, because it was more why I was going to therapy.
Sure.
But everyone was very supportive. But what I also realized is, even despite the support from some people, I just realized that some relationships were no longer serving me. And so I am in a phase right now kind of like a transitionary phase where I'm definitely shedding some older friendships and trying to build more meaningful new ones. Like I said, I've met some of the most amazing people that I've ever met over the past year. And those I just want to run towards because I just feel so heard, so seen, so supported. Not that some of these other ones didn't support me. I just realized that I am taking my life in a different direction and that some of these other ones are still kind of where I used to be.
Sure.
No judgment towards anyone. I have the utmost respect for everyone, whatever they want to do, totally respect it. But I have chosen to take my life a different path. I don't really drink anymore. So I realized some of my relationships are really centered around drinking. That's kind of the only time I would see them, like out on the weekend at the bar. And so it's not like I'm choosing, hey, I don't want to hang out with you. It's just, I don't want to go drink. And if that's the only time we get together, then naturally I'm not going to be there. Right. So it's been very, I would say smooth, but it hasn't been like, hey, I don't want to be friends with you anymore, because there's no benefit to that. And so it's just been much more natural. And sure. I'm okay with that. And you know, was that hard for a little bit of my life? Yeah. But once you are secure in who you are and where you want to take your life, I actually think it's quite easy. Maybe I'm in the minority there, but when you are so connected to yourself and you know who gives you energy and who takes it from you, I'm just going to go towards the people that give me energy. Because you can't put a price on that. The idea of giving energy versus taking it. I think I'm an extroverted introvert. You know, if I'm in the right social setting, which is normally a smaller group of people with people that I really care about, I'm extremely social. But I would rather sit at my house, read a book with my dog, than go out and hang out with 15 buddies and shoot the shit or be at the bar, because that drains energy from me. So it's just about figuring out what gives me energy, who takes energy from me, and just following my heart, really. That's really what it comes down to.
I'm listening to what you're saying and relating it so deeply to myself, mm-hmm. almost like I'm having a conversation with myself in some mm-hmm. ways, which is kind of weird. But there's something about friendships, particularly those that have lasted for a long time. And people talk about loyalty and all of these things. And going back to what we're talking about earlier, about people being evolving beings, no two people in a relationship evolve at the same rate. And sometimes you're in a friendship and you start here at like an equal level, but you move up here and your friend, you know, is still kind of hovering around there. And then that relationship doesn't really serve either of you anymore. And I don't know, this might just be my head. I'm trying to get myself out of the idea that that constitutes disloyalty. It doesn't constitute disloyalty. It just means that you're moving along on different paths. And there's no drama, no shade, no beef, no ill will, none of that. It's just, you're in different places. You're different people.
I never thought about that from that lens, but yeah, I don't view it as disloyalty, because if any of those guys gave me a call and said, hey, I need your help, or I need your support, or I need you, can you talk on the phone? I would absolutely take that call and I'm there for them. But I only have so much time in the day. I only have so much energy in the day, and I'm super intentional with where I place that energy. And I just don't have time to nurture 30 relationships anymore, nor do I want to. And so the majority of my focus goes towards people that I view are lifting me up, that are challenging me to be a better person, that make me feel just so seen and supported. With that said, I make it very clear to any of these people, if you ever need someone to talk to, I'm here. I'm not gone. I'm not out of your life. I just am doing some other things right now that are taking up a lot of my time, or seeing some other people. So I think the loyalty is still there. It's just the relationship looks different. Does that make sense? Like, that's,
yeah, that totally
how I
makes
that.
Sense. That's probably a much healthier way to look at it too. When you are encountering people, like people come to a life coach because they're at an inflection point in their lives in a similar way, but not exactly the same way someone would reach out to a therapist. If you encounter someone who's at the same inflection point in their life that you were at 2 or 3 years ago, what would you tell them?
For the same reason or for different reasons?
For the same reason.
Oof.
Because
that's a good question. I think it depends. Like, I think there's some things that I honestly don't feel equipped to handle. Like, I have had people where I've said, hey, I think this is better dealt for therapy. Mm. I've had that conversation. If it's a lot of emotional processing, that to me is something that a therapist is probably better equipped than I am. But I think I would start with, how does it feel? How are you feeling? I think just get a sense of where are they at today, meeting them there, and say, well, where do you want to go? What's your goal here? You tell me. I actually had someone around this same topic, and they were like, well, I want to be happier, but I don't want to accept who I am. Like, I don't want to accept this part of me, but I want to be happier. And it was at that point where I said, I don't think I'm equipped. And it was like, because I have so much shame around it from my past. And it was at that point that I said, I don't think I'm the person that's going to be able to best serve you.
Right.
Because I don't think a coach would have been best served for me, if that makes sense. But more generally speaking, I think it's just meeting people where they're at, understanding where they are today and where they want to go in the future. And then helping them unlock that creative, resourceful individual that's always been there. So I like to do a lot more forward thinking to get people kind of out of this stuck mindset. Like, tell me about a time when you were at peace in life. What did it feel like? What were you feeling? What would it feel like? How can you apply that back to your current situation today? You know, get people out of this rut, these feelings of sadness and anger and resentment or whatever it is they're feeling, and try to get them to a place of peace and happiness and clarity that we've all had at some point in our life, to show them that it's still there. You buried it pretty deeply, but it's still there, and helping people kind of get to that headspace.
That all makes a lot of sense. It's an interesting thing, right? Because if somebody reached out to me,
I'd be curious to hear what your answer would be.
And they were struggling with their sexuality and they wanted to be happy, but they were unwilling to accept their sexuality. I feel like my response would be, look, this is something that's innate in you, right? There's no way to not accept it and be happy. That accepting it is intrinsic to your happiness.
Right.
And also, I feel like every client that I have, I would be like, do you have a therapist? I don't know if I want to see people that don't have therapists, because seeing a therapist, I think, is kind of like the first base when it comes to doing the work on yourself. And a coach is there for a different part. I'm trying to make a weird analogy here. It's like you're wearing a nice pair of shoes and the pair of shoes is dirty. The coach is there to help you use the toothbrush and shine it up to make it look pretty again, whereas the therapist is helping you rebuild the shoe.
Yeah, that's great. You're better with analogies than I am. I wish my brain thought that way, and I'm working on it.
Improv might help you there.
It does. Therapy is more backwards looking, is what I tell people. So like, why is Mike the way he is? What happened? And what happened growing up where Mike has these beliefs, these thought patterns? And coaching is like, we could acknowledge the past, but Mike is here. We want Mike to go here. How do we get Mike from point A to point B?
Yeah, absolutely. Where do you see as the next phase of your journey? What is the next step for Matt?
Yeah, next for me is continuing to explore coaching, what it entails, how I can kind of build on those skills. I set a goal for myself last year to try 4 new things this year. I beat it, which is great.
Hell yeah.
I want to challenge myself even more this year. So I want to start trying some new things. I want to do more meditating. I think that's in for 2024, because I've realized I've gained a lot of clarity through meditation. And so, like I mentioned, I just started a dance class. I hope in the end of 2024, I can actually kind of dance. So that is something. I want to build more meaningful relationships in my life. I want to continue to explore my sexuality. That's obviously very important to me. And I think most importantly, I want to give myself permission to have fun. You know, I'm at this place in my life where I love self-help. I love bettering myself. And I love myself, so I take care of myself. I read, I exercise, I try to make sure I'm well rested. And I also want to just give myself the gift of not taking life too seriously, laughing at myself. If I want to just sit and watch a show, that's okay. You don't have to be bettering yourself 24/7. I think I'm in this go, because I've unlocked so much energy, and I have so much energy that I want to pour in love, that I want to pour into the world, and I want to continue to do that. I think the last thing I want to do is get more involved in the community. I'm involved with a couple nonprofits. I want to get involved with a couple more, but really just pour love into the world, because I feel like for so long I've blocked my heart from connecting to my heart and connecting to myself because of the hate that I had around the relationship with my sexuality and other stuff, just that I was very judgmental and critical. And I've now been able to tap into my higher self, if you will, tap into my heart. And I just want to pour all this energy and love that I have into other people, into the world, because it makes me feel so good. And it makes me feel so good seeing other people light up, seeing other people's days made. Like, there is no price tag on that for me. And so it's really just showing up in the world with love, giving myself permission to be a little lighter and to try a bunch of new things. I don't know where I'll be next year, but I know if I continue to listen to myself and listen to my heart and follow what my gut and my intuition tells me, I know I'll be exactly where I'm supposed to be.
Nice. And one last question, because we'll be releasing this episode at some point in early 2024. In 2024, we'll still have that New Year smell. And I even see in mid-December, as we're recording this, I see a lot of people on social media talking about resolutions. And I am of two minds about New Year's resolutions. And I'm wondering what you think or how you feel about the turning the page of the calendar and how people all of a sudden are like, oh, I want to do all these things because it's a new year, as opposed to being deliberate about making incremental changes over the course of a year that can lead to bigger change.
Yeah, you probably know where I'm going to go with my answer. I actually just made a post on this on social media recently, but 45% of New Year's resolutions are people don't follow them by the end of January. And I think New Year's resolutions act as a temporary source of motivation, but if you don't address the underlying cause and address the underlying forces behind why you haven't made a change thus far, you're still going to fall flat on your face a month later. And so I always tell people, why not start tomorrow? Go get a 2-week head start on everyone else. If you're actually committed to change, you will want to start tomorrow. You will not want to start in 2 weeks. But again, it's just a temporary source of motivation. So I think this past year was the first year I've actually achieved all my resolutions, but it was because I had worked on myself and I had committed to the person that I wanted to become. I was clear on why I was setting the resolutions that I was. It was to become a healthier individual, is to become a more authentic individual. And so when you put an identity of this is the person I want to become by doing these things, and it's not just like, oh, this sounds good. Like, it sounds good to work out 7 days a week or never eat a piece of junk food. That sounds great. But what happens when the times get tough? I heard something that someone said that you should start these things when you're at your lowest point. Because if you can show yourself you can do it when you're really struggling, it's going to feel 100 times easier when you're feeling good. Because most people set these things when they're feeling great, they're rejuvenated. And then the second they hit a little bit of adversity, it's back to the old ways. So as you probably guest, I am not a huge fan of resolutions, but I am a big fan of goal setting. And so set your goals, but start tomorrow and become very clear on why you're setting the resolutions that you are.
Right. And I think there people should probably be a little bit kinder to themselves in situations like that, because on January 1st, we don't know what December 31st, 2024 is going to look like. We don't know what January 5th, 2024 is going to look like. Life has a way of throwing curveballs at you that are going to try to throw you off your game. And you could start the year with the best of intentions and want to do the sit-ups and the push-ups and eat right and hold a lady's hands when they cross the street and do all that other stuff. But what happens when you have a heavy day at work and you can't work out? What happens when you injure yourself? What happens when you end up in a relationship or whatever? Like, you have to make room for the unpredictability of life.
I love that. I think that's really helped me, is just giving myself self-compassion and giving myself grace. I think it's really powerful. It's so cliche, but talk to yourself how you talk to a friend. It sounds so cliche, but
it's true.
It's so real, and it's been so helpful for me. And the other thing is, celebrate yourself. Celebrate the little wins. That's going to make the journey fulfilling. That's going to make the journey enjoyable. If you're so focused just on the outcome and how far you are and how long you still have to go, it's going to be much easier to give in permanently. Whereas if you're like, well, I want to lose X amount of weight and I still have 40 more pounds to go, or you look at it as, I lost a pound this week, I made progress. Celebrate that.
Yep.
celebrate yourself. Like, hey, I'm proud of myself. I think just the way you talk to yourself is so, so important. It's been a total 180, and it's made such a difference in my life. So the two things I would say are, give yourself some grace, show yourself some compassion, and celebrate the little wins, because little wins are still wins.
That's right. Baby steps are still steps.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting, right? I think that if I was to take an average of the age of most of the guests I've had on this show, it's probably early to mid-40s. I often feel as though people who are maybe 30 and younger have it together a lot more than folks who are older and grew up in a time that was more socially conservative. But, you know, we've all got journeys, and those journeys are dependent on a lot of factors. And Gen Z goes through stuff in a much different way that we do, or that I'm in Gen X, than we do, but they still go through stuff, and they still have journeys, and they still have things that they need to figure out. And big shout out to Matt, who is representing for Gen Z or millennials. I'm not sure which is which, but either way, he's younger than me, and he is doing the damn thing. So big shout out to him. If you would like to follow Matt on social media, you can at mkovachis23. That is mkovachis23. Or you can follow the Men in the Arena podcast at the Men in the Arena _. Don't forget that _. Thank you again, Matt, for sharing your story. I hope to have you back at some point. It's really interesting, right? I think that if I was to take an average of the age of most of the guests I've had on this show, it's probably early to mid-40s. I often feel as though people who are maybe 30 and younger have it together a lot more than folks who are older and grew up in a time that was more socially conservative. But, you know, we've all got journeys, and those journeys are dependent on a lot of factors. And Gen Z goes through stuff in a much different way that we do, or that I'm in Gen X, than we do, but they still go through stuff, and they still have journeys, and they still have things that they need to figure out. And big shout out to Matt, who is representing for Gen Z or millennials. I'm not sure which is which, but either way, he's younger than me, and he is doing the damn thing. So big shout out to him. If you would like to follow Matt on social media, you can at mkovachis23. That is mkovachis23. Or you can follow the Men in the Arena podcast at the Men in the Arena _. Don't forget that _. Thank you again, Matt, for sharing your story. I hope to have you back at some point.